Kessel's weak atmosphere slowly smothered the fires burning amid the ruins of the two concussion missile launchers on a ridge overlooking the landing zone. Smoke and dust rolled in a lazy mist down the escarpment and across the unpaved roadway carved from its face. Corrin extended the landing gear and brought his X-Wing to rest. He doffed his helmet, pulled on a breathing mask and a pair of goggles, then popped the release on his cockpit canopy. Corrin ran over to where Wedge and the Twi'lek pilot, Nuwara Venn, stood beside an orange, mushroom-like tent. Because Nuwara had been a lawyer before joining Rogue Squadron, Wedge had planned to take advantage of his negotiation skills as they worked with Morris Duel on the exchange of prisoners. Corrin saluted Wedge. "How did your conversation with Duel go?" Wedge frowned. "I think I got my points across, but he's right on the edge of paranoia, and it doesn't take much to push him over. Duel's probably a glitbiter." The Twi'lek twitched a head tail in Corrin's direction.
"I don't believe I've heard that term before."
Corsec slang, sorry. "Glitter Stem is the most potent form of spice. The stuff most people use is cut and diluted so heavily that all they get from using it is just a little euphoria. Glitbiters are taking the real thing and think they can read minds. They assume any mind they can't read is closed because the person is plotting against them." A landspeeder came down the road and stopped before them. Two people got out and a trooper escorted them toward the tent. The man was very tall and thin. What little white hair he had on his head was so wispy that Kessel's weak atmosphere made it float. The woman came up to the man's shoulder and had deep brown hair. The trooper moved the two visitors through the tent's simple airlock. Then Corrin and Nuwara followed Wedge through. Once inside, they were able to remove their breathing masks, though the acrid stink of hot plastic almost made Corrin put his back on. He and Nuwara sat on some folding camp chairs. Squeezing past a table with a holoprojector on it, Wedge extended his hand to the white-haired man.
"I'm Commander Wedge Antilles, New Republic Armed Forces. I lead Rogue Squadron."
"I knew your daughter, Lu Jane." The man shook Wedge's hand firmly.
"I am Kathar Forge. This is my wife, Maida. I want to thank you for the hologram you sent after Lu Jane."
He fell silent and his wife put her arm around him.
"She always wanted to show that something good could come from Kessel."
Wedge made introductions and explained the mission to them. "In exchange for the prisoners, we are going to take as many of the good people from here as we can. On the top of my list is you and your family, if you want to go. And go or stay, I'd appreciate it if you pointed out people who should be on the list." Kathar nodded slowly.
"I'm willing to help you, Commander."
Wedge hit the power switch for the holoprojector. An image of Morris Duel glowed to life. The Batrachian Ribbit hopped impatiently from one foot to the other, then stopped and clapped his webbed hands together. He twisted his whole body around to peer closely with his good mechanical eye at the holocam. The green of his flesh melded with a similar hue of his jacket, while the tan tracery looked as if he'd been drizzled with paint.
"Is that you, Antilles?"
"It's me, Duel. I've got my first exchange to offer you."
Wedge looked over at Nuwara Venn, and the Twi'lek nodded.
"I have a group of 10 Sulistan. For them, I'll take Arb Skinksneck."
"No! Skinksneck is mine! He does not leave."
Duel hopped up and down angrily, then searched around until the metal and glass mechanical eye again spotted the holocam.
"For these Sulistans, I will also give you Zeka Thine."
The name didn't surprise Kor. He and his father had arrested Thine, whose nickname was Patchy, for smuggling. However, the man had also been tied to the murders of nearly a dozen people. At the mention of Thine's name, Kathar shuddered and Maida clung to his arm. Corrin raised a hand and Wedge hit a mute button on the holoprojector.
"Commander, he's too anxious. He wants to be rid of Thine. We can get more for him."
Wedge nodded, then unmuted the communications device.
"Thine isn't of interest to me. I'd have to be mad to let someone like that leave this rock."
"You will take him or you get nothing else."
Wedge pulled a comlink from a pocket in his flight suit and held it up where Duel could see it. Rogue Leader to 12, you're free to fire on warehouse number 1. Duel reeled back.
You wouldn't dare.
No? Duel's thick purple tongue played out over the thin line of his mouth.
The Solistans you can have. What else?
Wedge turned away from the projector as if giving the problem some thought. Nowara held up fingers to indicate which of the target groups he thought should be added to Thine's ransom. Wedge nodded, then turned back.
We're sending you the data on a group of 5 Bothans, including Eskra Plocray.
Plocray.
Duel's mouth snapped shut, then he bowed his head.
Done. And Thine brings with him another.
Who?
His cutter.
Wedge looked at Corrin, who explained.
A cutter is someone who prepares spice for use or sale. It's come to mean someone close enough to a person that they can trust to cut their spice.
He probably means aid. Kassar's head came up.
He means lover.
Corrin shrugged. That too. Wedge turned to the forges.
Do you know who it is?
Maida answered.
We do. Her name is Aniri. She's our daughter.
3 silhouettes appeared on the other side of the airlock's translucent inner seal. The soldier inside the tent opened the airlock and tugged Thine through first. The hobbles on the man's feet made him stumble, but he managed to recover his balance. Clean-shaven and bald, Thine's flesh had 2 shades of color. Most noticeable was the light blue, because it seemed to have been splashed on over the whitish pink color. The biggest blotch covered the top left quadrant of his face down to his cheekbone. His eyes were red, except for slender diamond pupils. Thine spied Corrin.
Horn? Here?
Perhaps you never got the message I sent you.
What message was that?
Your father's dead, isn't he? Corrin felt as if his heart had been slammed back against his spine. He realized, though, that Thine had probably heard of his father's death and decided to claim responsibility just to get at him. The soldier brought Aniri Forge through the airlock, and Corrin saw the resemblance between her and her sister the second she removed her breathing mask. She appeared shocked to see her parents, but her face closed up quickly as she turned away from them and rested her hands on Thine's left shoulder. Wedge looked at Thine.
The New Republic has authorized me to give you transport from Kessel to a destination you will learn later. You will be given tasks to perform. If you succeed in performing them to our satisfaction, we will grant you a conditional pardon for your crimes. Do you understand?
What if I decide to accept your offer, then I just go away?
Corrin answered.
You weren't that hard to find before, Patches. You won't be again.
You don't scare me, Horn. Corrin retrieved Thine's breathing mask and shoved it into the man's face.
I'm not interested in scaring, just catching, Thine. No matter where you go, I'll find those double diamonds of yours, just like last time.
Wedge nodded to the guard.
Take him outside and prep him for shuttle transport. Miss Forge, you're not required to go with Thine.
She glared at her parents, then looked at Wedge.
I've made my choice to be with him. It is no one's business but my own.
Corrin held a hand out to her.
Look, we can protect you from him.
Oh? Like you protected my sister?
She fitted the breathing mask over her face, then turned and stepped into the airlock. The rest of the exchanges went fairly smoothly, and by the end, they had managed to pull 150 political prisoners from Kessel in exchange for picking up 16 of the most hardened criminals the galaxy had ever known. And by the end of the process, Corrin had found someone they could use to keep Thine in check. The last prisoner was old, though not frail. His dark eyes still sparked with life, and he had a full head of white hair. Corrin had never met Moff Fleury Voru before, but his grandfather had told stories of the man. As the administrator in charge of the Corellian sector under the Old Republic, Voru had turned a blind eye to smuggling activities, which made Corellia a center for smuggling, and gave it a reputation that had not changed over the years. Wedge explained their plan and concluded,
Do you know Zekathine?
Voru sighed.
I do.
aggressive and intelligent, though aggression is his default setting. Unpredictable beyond that. Mr. Horn thinks you can control him.
Control him? No.
Keep him from going too far?
Yes.
I can do that for you. Walking through one of the long, dark corridors built beneath the Imperial Palace usually depressed Kirtan Lor, especially when, as now, he was on his way to a meeting with General Evir Derekut. Yet even this prospect could not dampen his mood. Corrin Horn was on Kessel freeing prisoners. Lor allowed himself a laugh that echoed through the passage. Over the past 2 weeks, the freed criminals had been filtered back into Imperial Center. It must have killed Horn to let someone like Zeka Thine escape justice. What I wouldn't have given to see it. Lor forced himself to laugh again, but his fear of Corrin Horn undercut his sense of superiority. When he'd served on Corsac with Horn, the young pilot, his partner Ayala Wasiri, and their Corsac superior, Gil Bastra, had managed to deceive Lor long enough to escape the Imperial service. Lor had found Gil Bastra after a year and a half of searching, but Bastra maintained that he had deliberately given Lor clues. Lor had thought he was close to Corrin One, but that had been a mistake, and Lor had no idea where Wasiri was. The door to Derekut's lab opened, and the rotund form of the general stood there beaming. Derekut clapped his hands.
The Quarren were very helpful, very helpful. You must come see for yourself.
Derekut stepped out of the doorway and Lor entered the lab. The air whistled as the door closed behind them. Derekut glanced back.
We are under negative air pressure in here. If something breaks out, it will not be carried by a draft out of the lab.
I thought humans would be immune to this plague.
No, that's not exactly correct.
The general smiled. Lor knew the man loved exposing any weakness in his knowledge of the project.
We are starting from a number of strains of what I call my Krytos virus.
Aliens show a high susceptibility, but it is possible that spontaneous mutations could change it enough that humans could be affected. Lor lowered his voice.
You can cure it, yes?
Derekut nodded.
Bacta.
Is that all?
Bacta was the treatment for everything from a simple cut to severe combat trauma, from a sniffle to the virulent Bandonian ague.
If Bacta will cure it, the disease is useless.
Hardly. The more severe the case of the disease, the greater the amount of Bacta needed to cure it. In the late stages, Bacta can hold the disease at bay. But some organs and extremities may be so damaged that they will require cybernetic replacement. Come and see.
Derekut led him into a stainless steel corridor. Transparent steel windows afforded views of detention cells with one or two individuals in them. On the left were piggish Gamorreans. The squid-headed Quarren were on the right side. Both looked miserable in their clinically spare environment. The first few Gamorreans were placid. Farther along, they appeared to be in some sort of a stupor. Their eyes were glassy and fixed on one point. Their flesh was covered with angry black boils, even on the soles of their feet.
Then he saw a final stage patient.
The boils had cracked open and were oozing black blood. The Gamorrean left bloody footprints everywhere it wandered. And wander it did, darting left and right as if the floor were made of molten lava. Finally, the creature slammed into a wall and fell to the ground, where it vomited up liters of thick black fluid. Kirtan Lor fell to his hands and knees, fighting to keep from vomiting himself. He forced himself to stand.
Your work is most impressive. Utterly unforgettable.
The rebels are coming here to take the center of the Empire.
What they will get is a world of death, and they will be powerless.
Corrin Horn waited behind the transparent steel blast shield until the pulsar gates were pulsarless drive had shut down and the gangway started to descend. The modified Baudo-class yacht resembled its namesake because of the long, gently curving lines of its wings. Corrin realized he found the ship quite beautiful, which surprised him since both he and his father had worked hard to put the pulsar gate and its skipper out of commission.
It's old, skipper, he reminded himself.
Booster Tarek and Hal Horn had been each other's bane. Booster's facility for hauling all sorts of desirable contraband had made him some very powerful friends. He easily could have become a broker of goods, but he loved flying too much. Eventually, Corin's father caught him and Booster did 5 years on Kessel. Booster's daughter, Mirek, was unbraiding her long black hair as she came down the gangway. She stopped when she saw Corin and smiled. Linked by the fierce rivalry between their fathers as well as their birthplace of Corellia, they had managed to avoid inheriting their father's enmity. Corin returned Mirek's smile. "How was your run?" Mirek had just returned to Nokosor from Kessel with the Solistans Morris Duel had agreed to free. "No imperial complications." She laid a hand on his shoulder. "Any bad effects from the trip to Kessel?" "What do you mean?" She shrugged. "A lot of good people made it off Kessel, but I know their release meant some real rancor bait had to have been freed as well. Duel doesn't do anything for nothing." "Unlike some smuggler?" Her smile brightened. "I'm counting on you and Wedge to finish this empire off so I can begin collecting what I'm owed." "And if we don't?" "Then the chits will become collectible and I'll make some money back later." She gave him a light punch on the arm. "Nice change of subject, though." "Sorry." Corin hadn't answered her question about the Kessel exchange because he hadn't allowed himself to think about it. It was all well and good to tell Wedge before the trip that he didn't have a problem letting criminals loose. It was true that Corsec, like any other security force, made deals with lesser evils in order to get rid of greater evils. Corin had guessed that that was the reason for the Kessel operation. The Alliance would be pitting a resurgent Black Sun against the Empire. On the other hand, Corin would have felt a lot better if the criminals they freed had been put on a ship headed for the black hole known as the Maw. Mirek shook her head. "If you need someone to haul in any of that slime after we take Coruscant, I'm in, free of charge." Corin smiled. "But we won't tell your father you're working with a horn on such a thing." Mirek laughed. "No, I like him alive too much to shock him with that news." They headed off toward the central corridor to the mess hall, talking all the way. Corin knew he wasn't in love with Mirek yet, but he also knew that he'd soon be poised at the top of that slippery slope if he just let himself go.
"Corin."
They turned as a tall Gand came down the corridor. The edges of the armored plates of Ural's exoskeleton and the lower part of his right arm were paler than the rest of his body. His right arm was also smaller than the left. Corin pointed. "They removed the Bacta capsule."
"Yes, Ural is most pleased."
2 months before, at the first battle for Balea, Ural Quirg had been shot out of his X-Wing and had lost his forearm. By circulating Bacta through a capsule, Alliance medics had been able to speed up the Gan's rather remarkable regenerative ability. An armored lid flipped down over Ural's multifaceted ebon eyes and back up again.
"Commander Antilles wants to see you, Corin. He says it's official."
In Wedge's office, Corin received a briefing on his undercover mission to Coruscant. He was not able to say goodbye to Mirek. The spaceport at which the darkened starliner Jewel of Cherba set down was a multi-story facility built atop a triad of towers approximately 50 kilometers from the Imperial Palace. Wedge and Pash Kraken disembarked together. Wedge was disguised as Imperial Colonel Roach. He wore a tight-fitting black mask and had a mechanical two-fingered hand with a motor that whirred when he used it. Pash was playing the part of Imperial Prefect Dust. Before they could worm their way through the crowd to their luggage, a brown-haired woman in a prim gray medtech uniform approached them.
"I am Irin Fossil. I am from the Rohari Biomechanical Clinic. I was sent to meet you. I left word with your aide, Captain Sino."
Wedge nodded solemnly. "Accepted." The woman had used the correct phrases to introduce herself, proving she was one of Aaron Kraken's agents. She and Pash picked up the luggage. Then she led them out to a waiting lift car. In the car, Wedge was able to take his uncomfortable mask off. The woman stared at him.
"Forgive me. I had been told you were important, but I didn't realize. You're Wedge Antilles, right?"
Wedge nodded and she extended her hand.
"I'm Ayela Wasiri. It's a pleasure to meet you."
"Ayela Wasiri? Why, that was Corin's partner's name."
"I've heard of you, too. I can't say from where, of course.
She shook her head. No, of course not. I can say this. What I have heard makes me think we have a chance to accomplish everything on this mission that we set out to do. Making his way from the Jewel of Cherba's exclusive Ultra Deck through the spaceport on Coruscant, Corran Horn felt miserable. His cover story required him to be swathed in heavy purple and red robes. His collar had been starched and pressed until it felt like a razor against his larynx. A big cylindrical hat crowned him while the skirts of the outermost robe dragged behind him. He kept his hands hidden in the sleeves of the robe, as he had been instructed a good Kuati Telvan would do. On the Jewel, he had been a curiosity, viewed with a mixture of envy and pity. It was Arisi's appearance that made him the envy of every male in Ultra Class. Even under everyday circumstances, Arisi Dalaret had an elegant beauty, with her short black hair and sparkling blue eyes. She had been raised among the privileged humans on Typhara, and had benefited greatly from the riches her family made from the Bacta cartel. Mirax had referred to Arisi more than once as the Bacta Queen, an epithet that she uttered with a mixture of envy and disgust. In her disguise as a fellow traveler, Arisi was wearing tight blue leggings beneath a loose blue blouse swept with gold and silver. A belt gathered the blouse at her waist, which was a good thing, because otherwise it had no fasteners. The idea of sharing a cabin with her doubtless seemed wonderful to plenty of men. The pity came when they saw how she treated him. Arisi berated him mercilessly. On those occasions, she chose to acknowledge his presence. Most of the time, he trailed respectfully after her, paying for things she bought, carrying things, picking up after her, and apologizing graciously in her wake. Arisi tapped her foot impatiently as a stocky female customs official glanced at her data pad. Ristark? Arisi nodded coldly. I have a travel file with the appropriate visas for you, but not for him. He is Dark Grissel. Arisi waved her left hand dismissively. He is there. I only show one passenger. Arisi reached out with one finger and punched a button on the woman's data pad. There, baggage. A scowl settled over the official's face. State the purpose of your visit to Imperial Center. He is Telvan. I have come here to conceive. Telvan were men drawn from the middle classes on Kuat. They were raised by their families to excel in academics, social manners, and athletics. When they reached the appropriate age, upper-class members of the great Kuat merchant houses purchased them for the purpose of parenting a child with their daughter, then raising that child. In a shuttle bound for the Hotel Imperial, Corran and Arisi seemed to be alone, but he continued to play his part, looking ahead and discouraging Arisi from making conversation. She had made no secret of her attraction to him, but though he found her very attractive, he wasn't interested in anything more than friendship. He thought of Arisi as being inescapably outside his social class. Although she had joined the rebellion because of the true nobility in her heart, the fact was that she clearly enjoyed luxury and treated it as her due. Corran, on the other hand, was surprised by his inability to get used to it. Arisi's hand tightened on his arm. Oh my, look. The shuttle gave them an unobstructed view of the planet. They sailed in beyond the sphere of the Golan Space Defense Platform and the Orbital Solar Reflection Station. The latter reflected sunlight down to the planet to warm zones near the glacial caps at either pole. The lit side of the planet had a spiky, angular quality to it, with towers rising up and Grand Canyon sinking down through a khaki and gray landscape. Skyhook, massive stone islands flecked with green and purple gardens, floated lazily over the Feral Creek terrain. Corran could see nothing natural on that side of the world, just the rough scars of humanity's constant reconstruction of the planet. The night side, by contrast, sparkled and shimmered with millions of lights, hinting at life unseen. Approaching the line of demarcation between day and night, Corran saw a building that could only be the Imperial Palace. An arrogant edifice, it rivaled the Minare Mountains to the south. That artificial mountain housed the Imperial bureaucracy. Impressive, isn't it? Corran looked up and found the shuttle's pilot, a woman with snow-white hair, standing in the hatchway. Shouldn't you be flying this thing? We're on instrument approach to the Hotel Imperial. My droid co-pilot can handle it. Corran smiled. You're our contact? The pilot nodded. We've not much time here, but the cabin is clean, so we can talk briefly. I already know who you are. Here, I go by the name of Rima Borealis. We'll get you into the hotel and book you into a suite. New identities and identification cards will be supplied there. When the entry monitor satellites on Coruscant beamed an inquiry to the Pulsar's gate, Mirax identified her ship as the Maracy Hope. She turned to explain the ID to the crew of rogues she was ferrying in. Errol Numb, Nawara Venn, Ural Gand, Rissati, the Shistaven and Wolfman Shield, and the youngest of the crew, Gavin Darklighter from Tatooine. Maracy Hope is a known slave runner for one of the brothels on the edge of Invisit. Gavin frowned. Invisit? I thought they briefed you before this run. Invisic is a chunk of the Imperial City popularly known as the Invisible Sector, primarily because most people don't want to admit it exists. It's large enough to swallow up 3 or 4 of the largest metropolitan areas anywhere else in the galaxy, but here it's just one precinct of many. Invisic is a contraction that is used by folks who frequent the area. It's also known as the Alien Protection Zone, Gavin said. Right, but only the military uses that term. The black market thrives down there. Think of it as Mos Eisley, but uglier, nastier, and less hospitable. That's where I was told to let you off. Wedge shuddered as he and Ayala and Pash Kraken moved out of the Galactic Museum's Sith artifact room. Got some stuff. Wedge and Pash's undercover assignment had been to assess the loyalty of the planet's populace. Wedge had decided that by learning what the Empire wanted its citizens to believe about the rebellion, he could determine whether or not the Imperial propaganda efforts were successful. The museum had proved very instructive in this regard. One whole floor was given over to the Emperor and his life. Holograms of people who had known him served as tour guides at each display. All the displays promoted the view that everything the Emperor had done had been for the good of the people. A holographic image of Darth Vader sizzled to life when people approached.
Behold my master and weep. He has been stolen from us by those who embrace hatred.
As Vader spoke, a holographic simulation of the battle at Endor played. An outnumbered and outgunned Imperial fleet drove a dagger into the heart of the Rebel formation. The pinpoint accuracy of Imperial gunners laid waste to the Rebels. As the war raged, the Emperor appeared looking beatific as he pleaded with an unseen rebel host. His expression melted into sorrow and pain, then his eyes blazed and his fists knotted. Suddenly his image exploded, taking the Death Star with it. The explosion tore into the rebel fleet. The whole presentation had sent a shiver through Wedge. He had been at Endor. He had fired the shot that helped destroy the Death Star. Yet this telling of the story suggested a benign purpose for the Death Star, and made the rebels out to be monsters for considering using one on an inhabited planet. Indeed, the Emperor had sacrificed himself to save lives. The history of the Jedi Knights was also presented. It implied that they had become corrupt when human Jedi Masters took on non-human disciples. When they emerged from the Jedi exhibit, Pash asked, "Are you too interested in getting out of here?" Wedge didn't answer immediately because his attention was drawn to the large transparasteel window to the north. A dark, roiling cloud was coalescing, and lightning shot through it, then arced up into the air. A brilliant energy thread linked the cloud with the lowest of the planetary shields. Seconds later, an explosive rumble of thunder sent a tremor through the building. Wedge looked over at Ayala. "That's a nasty-looking storm. Are we safe here?" "Sure. A compressor probably blew in one of the buildings down there. You'll know it's a really bad storm when the skyhooks detach their tethers and move off." Wedge started toward the lifts when a woman grabbed his elbow and launched herself into his arm. "Darling," she kissed him full on the lips. "I'm so glad I caught up with you." Wedge pried himself loose and recognized her. "Merak, yes, love. We were just getting ready to look for you. Where have you been?" "I missed some connections and couldn't get out when I wanted to." Mirax winked. "You know me. I always push my luck with my travel plan." The week Corrin had spent wandering through the upper precincts of Coruscant had accustomed him to the feeling of being constantly watched. Of course there were reasons for people to watch him. He was sipping Estcaf at a tapcaf table on the edge of a promenade in the Imperial Palace's Grand Corridor, accompanied by two striking women, Irisi and Rima. Corrin and Irisi had been given two areas to study in their survey of Coruscant: basic security and medical services. Much of the week had already been spent in passive observation of the Coruscant Constabulary and the stormtrooper contingents that worked with them. The palace's Grand Corridor, the building from which the government was run, had been the crowning destination in their survey of the upper levels of Coruscant. The Grand Corridor had immediately impressed him with its scope and size. The corridor ran for kilometers, and the open areas at the floor level could easily have accommodated a Star Destroyer. Banners of all colors and designs hung from balustrades and arches. Each one represented a world in the Empire, and there were more of them than Corrin figured he could count in a lifetime. Purple and green chahala trees lined the main floor and each of the upper levels. Their bark reacted to vibrations and sounds, sparking displays of color that splashed an ever-changing, opalescent mosaic on the gray granite walls and pillars. Security appeared to be lax, but Corrin picked up on things that Irisi clearly missed. Stormtrooper squads patrolled the main floor and passed certain checkpoints at fairly precise intervals. They appeared to be most concerned with breaking up or moving along groups of non-humans. Those with legitimate reasons to be in the building were urged to be on their way, while those gawking at the magnificence of the palace were directed to join escorted tours or leave. The upper galleries of the Grand Corridor seemed alien-free, yet the mechanism for keeping them that way was remarkably unobtrusive. Side passages leading to stairs or lifts narrowed considerably, forcing people to move through them no more than 2 or 3 abreast. Corrin suspected that in the narrow corridors below there were weapons detectors, and for all he knew, the chahala trees could have been genetically altered to make them sniffers for gas canisters or bombs. Corrin was just turning casually to Irisi when he saw a vision from the past that sent a chill straight through him. He pulled her to him and kissed her fiercely. Over Irisi's shoulder, he had seen Kirtan Lur. Corrin felt someone tap him on the shoulder and for the barest of moments thought Lur had spotted him. Instead, he heard Rima's voice. "The danger is past. He's gone up another level." Corrin pulled back and gave Irisi a quick kiss on the nose, then looked over at Rima. "How'd you know?" "Kirtan Lur's presence on Coruscant has not gone unreported. Correlating things I know about him and you was not difficult." Irisi blinked, then looked from Corrin to Rima and back. "What was all that about?" Corrin took a deep breath. "My father was murdered. I caught the Trandoshan who killed him, but Lur let him go. He'll pay for that one day. But don't worry. His date with justice can wait until we bring down the government that gives people like him power." Though he stood half a head taller than Asani Asarg, Lur always felt dwarfed by her. "You wish to see me, Madam Director?"
"I did indeed wish to see you. General Derricote now wants Sulistan for his experiments?"
"He does. He would have preferred Wookiees, but I explained to him the foolishness of killing off a valuable labor source." Isard frowned.
"I would prefer avoiding the slaughter of Sulistan. Like Wookiees, they are useful. However, if their sacrifice will give me dead bottom, the advantage outweighs the immediate disadvantage. Perhaps we should quarantine a breeding stock of Sulistan so they can eventually repopulate their world."
Kirtan marveled at her reasoning. On one hand, she was plotting to slaughter millions of creatures. On the other, she was concerned with having enough left to repopulate devastated worlds.
"Your precaution, Madam Director, is wise. But I wonder if it will be needed."
"You are approaching the subject obliquely, Agent Lur. Please be more direct. You see a problem with Derricote's Krytos virus?"
"I do. It can be cured by Bacta."
"I know."
"You do?"
"You see, Agent Lur, the rebels will require vast amounts of Bacta. At the current prices, in order to save lives,
They will bankrupt the rebellion.
Suddenly, Lure understood. When Verico gets the virus perfected, you'll turn this planet over to the rebels.
Exactly. And because the virus will not infect humans, I force the human rebels to act to save as many aliens as they can. If they do not, it will appear to their alien allies that they are just as unconcerned about aliens as they accuse us Imperials of being. Moreover, because elements of Rogue Squadron are on Imperial Center now, we can begin to implicate them in spreading the virus.
Though Mirax's appearance at the Imperial Museum surprised Wedge, Aiella took it immediately in stride. She looped an arm through Mirax's and smiled sweetly.
We have some catching up to do, so you boys just follow along and don't you dare eavesdrop.
Though she kept a light tone in her voice, Wedge read tension and wariness in her eyes. After the thunderstorm ended, they headed out onto the rain-slick promenade. Aiella and Mirax chatted and laughed as they meandered around, entering buildings, stopping at distance. Wedge and Pash followed them into a clothing boutique and watched as they played with a garment fabricator holo unit, lengthening and shortening, trimming and coloring dresses they'd never order. Finally, they emerged onto a promenade that hung out over an urban canyon with a river of shadow filling it. A repulsor lift cab came to a stop, and Aiella motioned them into it. Without instruction, the driver drove the vehicle away from the building and down into the thick shadows of the undergrowth. There they disembarked, and Aiella led them down an alley and into a sparely furnished room. Mirax sat with her back to one of the windows and let a slight smile play across her lips.
Which do you want first? The story of why I'm here on Coruscant, or how I managed to find you?
Aiella shrugged.
Which one will convince me you're not an imp?
Mirax shrugged.
I don't know what happened. I made the arrangements as usual with a broker. That gives me an identity code and a window for an exit vector. I enter 3 flight plans or so, get clearance on them, then head out. This time, when I tried to use the ID to enter the flight plans from a public data pad, things locked up. I cleared out and imp security landed on the place. I burned some favors my father had earned with Black Sun to get my ship and crew taken care of. Since then, I've been looking for a friendly face.
Wedge frowned.
Mirax is clean. I've known her all my life.
Mirax cleared her throat.
I can handle this, Wedge.
She jerked a thumb toward Wedge and Pash.
They're snub fighter jockeys. I knew that sooner or later they'd have to go to the Battle of Endor display at the Galactic Museum. These pilots could breathe vacuum easier than they'd miss seeing what lies the enemy is telling about them.
Wedge turned toward Aiella.
Well, at least you can tell she knows me.
Aiella looped a lock of brown hair back behind her ear.
Since you didn't run Commander Antilles into Coruscant, you didn't know he was here. That means you brought more pilots in, and were figuring they'd visit the museum. Your exit identity was blown, which means the rest of the pilots could have been compromised.
Mirax looked up at Wedge.
Are you and I the only folks from Corellia who don't sound like we were trained in deductive reasoning by Corsec?
Aiella patted Mirax on the knee.
I was trained in deductive reasoning by Corsec.
Mirax sighed and held her hand out.
I'm Mirax Tarek. You're Booster Tarek's daughter. I'm Aiella Wissiri. I just joined the Force when Hal Horn put your father away. I can believe Booster's daughter was sharp enough to stake out the museum.
Aiella sat back on the couch.
This complicates things incredibly. This place is a one-use safe house. I've called in someone I expected to help interrogate you if necessary. We'll still need the debriefing, of course. But now we need it to start assessing the damage to our operation here.
As unsettling as things were, Corrin felt glad when he and Arisi were back in their suite in the Hotel Imperial. The door clicked shut behind him, then the lights went out. He turned and felt Arisi's hands close gently around his back, as she kissed him with the fierce passion they'd shared in the Grand Hall. He let his arms enfold her. Irisi was a seductive vision, a dream made real and warm, and he knew she could quiet the thoughts raging through his mind. Powerful though that image was, a feeling of disaster dissolved it. Corin remembered his relief at avoiding a romantic entanglement with Ayella back when he was with Korsak because, aside from destroying her marriage, the affair would have changed their relationship forever. The friendship and trust they had developed working together could have never been reclaimed. Although they might have stuck together, their attraction had been mostly due to circumstance, which made for a poor foundation for any permanent relationship. And this is mostly circumstance too, Corin thought. Corin heard Mirax on Nokazor telling him that Irisi would not be good for him, and he'd seen how truly different they were as they traveled to Coruscant. He developed doubts about any relationship with her then, and this situation did not dispel them. He lived by his father's advice to trust his feelings. When he went against them, situations never turned out right. He broke away. Irisi, I can't. She flashed him a smile.
I think you're doing fine.
He kissed her hand. Seriously, I can't. We need to be able to rely on each other as partners. I'd like nothing better than to be here with you, but... She kissed his shoulder. Corin, few men allow their emotions to factor into their decision-making process. That ability makes you unique and worth pursuing. Guided by his emotion, Corin left Irisi behind in the suite, entered a lift, and hit the lowest numbered button he could find. The walkway onto which it dumped him didn't look that bad, though it was deeper than any place he'd been since his arrival on Coruscant. Shoulders hunched and hands jammed into the pockets of his bantha suede jacket, he started wandering. It didn't matter where he was going, just that he was going. He threaded his way through some speeder bikes hovering in front of a cantina. If there had ever been any lettering on the wall or door to indicate what the place was, it had long since faded. Corin had chased fleeing Salonians through sewers with better atmospheres than this place. Through the dense smoke that filled the air, he could see tables clogging the floor and booths against the wall. The walls near the entrance were decorated with a dense pattern of blaster bolt holes. Corin kept his gait casual as he approached the bar, slipping into a spot near the inn. A powerfully built Corin female in a sleeveless tunic planted her hands on the counter in front of him.
I think you're lost.
In an instant, Corin was back in Korsak making sweeps of Coronet City Cantina. If I wanted thinking, I'd not be in here. Loman ale. She returned with a small glass of ale, half of which was foam. He tossed a couple of credit coins on the bar and they disappeared in her gray fist. He started to assess the threats presented by the cantina's patron. Dozens of criminal profiles flitted through his brain. He classified people by species, the amount of interest they showed in him, and the kinds of hunches he got when he looked at them. Then he blinked. Through the swirling smoke, seated at a booth facing a tall, slender figure in a cloak and hood, Corin saw Tycho Selku. He looked away, then back again. The individual to whom Tycho was speaking stood. It could only be one person. Kirtan Lure.